Spine-tingling greetings, everyone. The music is provided by Bobby Mackey and Dustin DeFell. And, of course, I'm your host, Tessa Morrow.
Now today it's a different place. All the same with a new face. With strange mysteries hanging in the air. People in their sane minds swear they see you today. Are you looking for the love they took away? Everyone knows that you couldn't bear the pain, so you took your life in the pouring rain.
Thanks for stopping by and making Paranormal Prowlers podcast part of your morning, day, night, keeping you company for your graveyard shift, whenever you listen and wherever you are listening from Sleepy Town to the cities that never sleep, from Sin City to the City of Angels, from the Bermuda Triangle to the Arctic Circle, and everything in between, it's greatly appreciated.
Round of applause. This week's city shout-out goes to...
And let me tell you, folks, you will need your passport once again. Irvington, Kentucky. Jarrow, England. Biel, Vienne, Switzerland. Plaistow, New Hampshire. Sulaymaniyah, Iraq. And Fontainebleau, France. I told you you'd need your passport, my friends. I wasn't lying. Today we travel to Cedro Woolley, Washington. The Northern State Mental Hospital. It's an abandoned hospital that is nestled in the Cascade Mountains. And before I go further, I must do my duty and mention that this location is on private property. They do not conduct tours, nor are they open to the public or welcome any visitors. So if you step foot here, trust me when I say you are not a visitor, but a trespasser, and can end up in the slammer, and nobody wants that. Because how will you listen to my episodes if you're in the slammer, right? So it's just not worth it. Maybe if in the area, take pictures from afar. I love doing that. Like if I see an old, creepy looking abandoned building or ruins, I don't go in, but I just take a bunch of pictures. And who knows, you still may be able to get an EVP from afar. Never know. Never know. It's happened before. So due to overcrowding in two nearby mental asylums, Northern State was born. Construction starts in 1909, and they open to the public a few years later in 1912. It spans over 700 acres. Northern State, like oh so many other mental institutes that we see, were pretty well self-sufficient. Sprawling over that several hundred acres were necessary and convenient things such as a greenhouse, a dairy plant, sewer system, bakeries, a lumber mill, factories, and so much more. So patients who were able to function enough, they worked whether it was farming or handling the livestock or working in one of the many factories that was scattered about on the property. And a crematorium is built on site in 1927. And boy, did they sadly get a ton of use out of that thing. More on that in just a little while, though. So by the time 1950s approach, Northern State Mental Hospital was overcrowded, filled to the brim with patients. And again, I must mention, I don't think I've ever done an episode on one of these types of establishments that did not have that ever so annoying problem. Overcrowding. Now, what's literally insane, though, these places had many people who were in fact not insane. Maybe they had issues like epilepsy. That was a huge one. Someone having a seizure back then and it wasn't known that they were epileptic. And well, you find yourself with a crazy person or so you think is a crazy person or possessed or something. And you find yourself in one of these places, and that's not what you need. You need a doctor. You have epilepsy. You need medicine, not electroshock treatment. And remember, people were being thrown in for ridiculous things, like reading too much, so much overcrowding. I mean, guess what? If you took the people who should actually not be in these places and take them out, they probably would not have had overcrowding issues. And if they did, not to the extreme as what they were, right? Just like, okay, we have enough for 2,000 people, but guess what? We have 4,800 people. It's like, no, that doesn't work. And that's when things get really messy. So this establishment, it was accused of abusing the patients. We see this a lot in these type of institutes, unfortunately. But not all staff was bad, really. In fact, one man, a cook named Paul Stott, he refused to give patients rotten food. He had ethics. He was just like, no, this isn't right. And unfortunately, he lost his job for it. He also would go on to share that he had witnessed abuse from staff onto patients. And they also were known to transfer patients to other asylums, including across state lines into some other states, including Colorado and Oklahoma, but keeping the state allowance that came with each individual. How crooked and dirty can y'all get? I had never even heard about that before. I know that asylums, they're not, and these like state hospitals, they were not perfect by any means, but I had never heard that, transferring them and still getting the money. That's crazy to me. So anyways, they shut down in 1976. Other sites do say 1973. So let's just say they shut down between 1973 and 1976. Okay? Besides overcrowding, another thing that happened at these joints were so-called treatments. Today, some would be considered criminal acts. But back then, some truly thought that these things worked. Now, in 1921, Washington enacts a law that actually permitted the practice of forced sterilization of certain groups of people, and many people here at Northern State qualified, and they would fall victim to this, like they ever had a choice, right? Also conducted here were lobotomies and electroshock therapy. So horrible. USGhostAdventures.com talks more about the horrific treatment methods and procedures, and believe me, it's spine-tingling. Quote, like countless other mental asylums of the time, grisly experiments were performed on patients, some of which have been rumored to be part of the top-secret government program, MKUltra. Patients were being subjected to clandestine treatments like insulin shock therapy, lobotomies, and electroshock therapy. All of these were considered inhumane. Heavy sedation with powerful drugs was also a common form of treatment, but truly, it was just used to keep patients in line and submissive. Electroshock therapy is still practiced today, though the electric shocks are much weaker than they were decades ago. Now called electroconvulsive therapy, ECT is performed by applying short electrical jolts to the brain, which induce small seizures. The procedure has been used as an attempt to cure depression, autism, delirium, catatonia, and several other disorders, with mixed results. Side effects include heart arrhythmia, changes in brain structure, and cognitive impairment. Okay, so I'm still going to be reading from this, but it always kind of reminds me, I have to break off real quick and say, like, you know when you watch those, like, commercials, or really, who watches commercials? But when a commercial comes on for a certain type of medication or drug, right? And you're watching it and, or listening, and I always want to listen to the side effects because they're like, this may help your headache, but side effects include anal leakage, brain damage, suicidal thoughts. It's just like, wow, what the hell? I'll just stay with the headache. Thank you, though. Goodbye. Anal leakage? No, thank you. Back to the article. Quote, lobotomies were a relatively common practice throughout the 1930s through the 50s. Doctors would drill a small hole through the skull and into the brain to cure various mental health disorders. The procedure almost never worked, not surprising, and often ended up leaving the patient with extreme brain damage and severe disability. Many would lose their basic motor skills, and patients soiling themselves after treatment was not uncommon. Many died shortly after their surgery. Those who remained functional were rendered emotionally blank. They were usually left totally expressionless and ended up with a permanent 1,000-mile stare. Among these patients, suicide was commonplace. Sterilizations were also common at the hospital as well. Many patients were sterilized before being released. As hospital management said, it was what was best for society. Because most of the patients were immigrants, the sterilizations drew parallels to those uncovered at ICE facilities over the past few years. Ghostlyactivities.com shares that between the years of 1954 and 1958, that radiation experiments were conducted here. What is called Iron 55, which is a radioactive isotope, was forcefully injected into unwilling participants, which included 6 men and 18 women, and possibly others were affected by this. Quote, the hospital participated in radiation experiments on unwitting patients. The University of Washington injected radioactive iron into individuals to study how the body absorbed it. These experiments were part of a nationwide initiative backed by government agencies during the Cold War. Consent wasn't part of the equation. Washington also had eugenics laws on the books. That meant some patients, especially those deemed unfit or immoral, were forcibly sterilized. These included young women institutionalized for behavior considered sexually deviant or disobedient. We may never know how many lives were quietly erased in the name of progress. That's really eerie, right? It's like, almost like they're not wanting to really help the person out. It's like, how evil can we be? How sadistic can we be? How much pain can we put on to another human being? And that's exactly what they're doing. Lobotomies? Shoving a fucking thing up somebody's eye? I mean, yeah, I'd be surprised if one person benefited from that. Of course people were crapping themselves and going brain dead and having this 1,000-mile stare, whatever that was. It's like, yeah, of course. Nobody comes out of that their normal selves again. So while I couldn't find too much on patients here, I did come upon a page dedicated to a young woman. The Seattle Times discusses a young mother, a beautiful woman named Lillian Macy. They show a haunting image of her. She's in a dress and holding onto a hat as she looks sadly into the camera, or perhaps she's looking into the eyes of the person who is taking this picture. She is about to be separated from her children, said she had 2 children and was pregnant, or had just had a 3rd child. Couldn't find out which one was accurate. She's about to be separated from these kiddos, taken from her home, her safe haven, and put into a strange place, surrounded by even stranger people. Is that look in her eye despair? Sadness? Desperation? Perhaps feeling betrayed? I'm unsure why this mother of 2 was sent to the mental hospital, but she would spend a year short of a decade there, breathing her last breath, confined in Northern State. Sadly. A very, very sad ending for a very young woman.
You always come back for more. Like you don't know how this fucking ends.
At least 1,500 people have breathed their last breath here at Northern State. Sadly, when most people died here, their doomed bodies would go unclaimed. Families either were unreachable or they simply just were not interested. So the state took control of the unwanted bodies. Each one originally was born into this world, and I assume at one point had family and friends who cared about them, but that was in the past. Most of the people would be abandoned and cremated on site and stored into cans. Now, I again mention ghostlyactivities.com as they mention a death of a patient that took place in 1922. This person was brutally murdered within the prison. Hospital. My bad. Quote, one such tragedy happened in 1922 when a patient named Charles M. Anderson was murdered by another resident. Reports from the time indicate Anderson was struck repeatedly with a blunt object after an argument escalated. The staff were criticized for leaving dangerous patients unsupervised. The incident sparked an inquiry into the hospital's safety protocols, but no lasting changes were implemented. Note, This appears to be an urban legend. A Charles Anderson did die at the hospital in 1924, not 22, from acute mania. Two people were murdered here on site, James Holland in 1921 and John Shalick in 1922. Another patient, John Hesford, died under mysterious circumstances in 1928. Believe me, there's a lot more shady shenanigans, but I'll stop here because this article could go novel length. Yikes. Okay, so I did see that James Holland was not a patient here, but actually a hospital attendant, and he was murdered by a patient named Valentine Riedel, who did the killing with a razor. Couldn't really find anything on Valentine. Meanwhile, another name mentioned in the article that I just read, John Shalick, he was brutally murdered by a fellow inmate in early 1922. And sadly, I hate to say this, but John's murder remains unsolved to this very day. And the final man mentioned in the article is that of John Wilson Hesford. He suffered from epilepsy, and this is just horrible. While he was on the ground, I'm unsure if he had a seizure and dropped to the ground, or if he tripped and fell, or if he was sleeping, or something else. But he is brutally attacked by an employee, a sadistic asshole of a man named K.K. Kyler, who not only attacked the sick man, but also stomped on him while he was defenselessly on the ground. I mean, that's horrible. Now, sadly, this story does not have a happy ending, nor any justice. Hesford does die due to those injuries, which included broken ribs, and the man responsible for the epileptic man's death, Kyler, was eventually acquitted, with the judge blaming the death on epilepsy. Oh yeah, that's a rib breaker for sure, baby. Okay. People who have come here in the past, again, remember, it's private property, folks, have experienced things like major cold spots, that eerie feeling like you are not alone and that you are being watched, like every single move. Disembodied voices have been heard, and unexplained sounds also have been heard. People have seen dark figures wander throughout the area, especially in the burial grounds. Things have turned physical, as there have been people who have been touched or claim to have been touched. HauntedMedia.com talks more about the haunts. Visitors consistently report hearing disembodied screams and crying throughout the abandoned buildings. These sounds seem to emanate from empty hallways and locked rooms with no living source. Witnesses describe the cries as desperate and filled with anguish. The screams intensify after dark and during foggy weather conditions. Shadow figures are among the most commonly reported phenomena at Northern State. These dark humanoid shapes move along corridors and peer from broken windows. Witnesses say the shadows appear solid and purposeful rather than random tricks of light. Some visitors claim the figures follow them or block their path. Extreme cold spots manifest suddenly in specific locations throughout the complex. Temperatures can drop 20 to 30 degrees within a few feet. These cold zones often coincide with feelings of being watched or overwhelming sadness. Electronic equipment frequently malfunctions when entering these areas. Apparitions of former patients appear in period clothing from various decades. Some ghosts seem confused or distressed, wandering aimlessly through the ruins. Others exhibit aggressive behavior, screaming at visitors or throwing objects. Full-bodied apparitions have been photographed near the old tuberculosis ward and administration building. Physical contact from unseen entities occur with disturbing regularity. Visitors report being pushed, grabbed, or scratched by invisible hands. Hair pulling and clothing tugging happen frequently in the patient dormitories. Some investigators have captured EVP recordings of voices demanding people leave the premises.
Leave now or I will destroy you. Rawr!
The most famous spirit is known simply as the Nurse in White. Witnesses describe a female figure in an old-fashioned nurse's uniform walking the corridors. She appears most often in Building 205. The former medical wing. The apparition carries what looks like a tray of medications or medical instruments. Now, according to local legend, this nurse died in the 1940s under mysterious circumstances. Some say she took her own life after a patient assault. Others claim she was murdered by a violent patient who escaped restraints. Her ghost allegedly continues her rounds, checking on patients who no longer exist. Multiple witnesses have reported encountering the spirit of a young girl around 7 years old. She wears a faded blue hospital gown and has stringy dark hair. The child appears in the women's ward and near the old playground area. Visitors hear her giggling and running down hallways before vanishing. This ghost child is believed to be Mary Catherine Hansen. Records show she was admitted at age 6 in 1923 with developmental disabilities. She died 2 years later from pneumonia complicated by malnutrition. Her gravestone remains at the hospital cemetery with just her patient number. The same article also goes into detail talking about an angry spirit who possibly may be a patient who was committed in the late 1950s, named John Baxter Williams. They say that he was a violent schizophrenic and was notorious for assaulting staff members and fellow patients. I mean, that's when you just put them in a straitjacket and throw them in a little padded room so they can't hurt anybody or themselves. It says that he died in a restraint incident in 1962. And I'm sure that's what a lot of people felt when they were at this place and other establishments like it. What the hell is going on? So just a few years after they shut down, in 1981, a grisly scene is discovered at a chemical dump not far from the disgraced former mental hospital. A human head, or part of a human head, and intestines were found. This was associated to being from Northern State. So fast forward a couple of years later when another sinister discovery is made, and this time it's made by a funeral home. They found what looked to be at least 200 food cans with remains of people who had died at the hospital. Now apparently they were placed in these cans due to the crematorium being shut down. Why is shut down when people certainly were still dying is beyond me. Did it have problems? Did it break down? Did it just stop working? Well, fix it, because people are dying. The cans would go on to be buried at an unnamed cemetery, and it's believed that close to 1,000 had the same fate. Truly just heinous and heartbreaking stuff, for sure. Nobody deserves that. And I found an article regarding the cemetery and how it's believed to be much larger than what is thought. Bellinghamlive.com talks about a spectacular human being named John Horn, and I want to share his kindness with you guys because what he is doing for the unnamed is really neat. Quote, a few years ago, Horn started tending to these markers, delicately edging along headstones and marking them with the flags. He's uncovered more than 200 stones and identified 300 more beneath the surface. He's able to match the initials on some of the markers to burial records and has helped some family members gather bits of information on their long-lost loved ones. It's thought that close to 1,800 patients are buried on the campus or in the surrounding valley. This includes those cremated and stored in cans. Why would a volunteer put such care into this old forgotten cemetery? Well, John explains that he has always loved old abandoned buildings and cemeteries, saying, not for the creepy factor, but because of the people who were there. Every person has a story, and I've always felt that these stories should be preserved. I've always loved cemeteries because they're full of forgotten stories. The ground isn't so willing to let the headstones out of its grasp, and after winter's freeze, the land becomes waterlogged, sucking the stones under again. But Horn continues to return each spring, preserving what he can. Horn reflects, the Northern State Cemetery is important to me because it's full of lives that no one cared to preserve or remember. When a small block of concrete with an initial on it is all that's left of someone's story, people should at least be able to see it. Once that marker is gone, there will be nothing left of that person. And I think everyone deserves better than that. Unquote. I love that. I love those kind of people. This is just beyond amazing. I mean, keep up the great work, John Horn. I love that. I really, really do. And thank you for giving the dead a voice and their names back. That's just absolutely amazing. I know it's not easy work, but by golly, you're doing it, and kudos to you.
And that concludes another fantastic podcast. Legend has it, if you don't tune in, I'll be returning to haunt you. So make sure to tune in for the next episode.
Did you enjoy this week's episode? Listen to the others. They are all amazing. Haven't heard every single one yet? Don't lose a wink of sleep over it, my friends. You can fix that now and binge listen to your heart's fright and delight by hitting up any of those podcast platforms, such as Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Downcasts, Player FM. Basically, wherever you may roam to hear your other spooky podcasts, you'll probably find Paranormal Prowlers Podcast lurking in the background. Thanks, everyone, and
I will see you next week.